Though farming within one of the nation's most expensive metropolitan areas, Santa Cruz County farmers grow nearly $660 million worth of food every year. This leads us to ask, can cities be prevented from eating up all the farmland?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with your host, Michael Olson. And now, get ready for 1 hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Welcome to the 1334th edition of the Food Chain Radio Show. Hey, perhaps you're among our friends way down there in Christchurch who are tuned into the Food Chain podcast at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What. Folks, Santa Cruz County is one of California's smallest counties in terms of geography, and yet it is one of the state's most bountiful in terms of its agricultural productivity per acre. In fact, the county's 608 farms produce about $660 million worth of food on 64,000 acres, which works out to about $10,300 per acre per year. If the county's farmers were growing wheat, they would only be making about $170 per acre per year. However, Santa Cruz County is located immediately adjacent to Silicon Valley, which hosts some of the world's best-paying jobs and most expensive metropolitan real estate. This proximity of farmland presents a wonderful opportunity for the metro to grow and collect more property taxes so it can grow even more. And it presents a wonderful opportunity for farmers to realize spectacular gains by turning their farmland into residential real estate. Thus the saying, farmers live poor, but die rich. In Santa Cruz County, the city that hungers most for farmland is Watsonville, which sits right in the middle of the Pajaro Valley's fertile floodplain. And Watsonville, like all cities, is compelled to grow. So we ask, can cities be prevented from eating up all the farmland? Well, today we've got a couple gentlemen here who can help us find an answer, and a good one. We'll start with Barry Baker, who is the Land Protection Director for the Land Trust of Santa Cruz County. Barry, welcome to the Food Chain.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Brian Largay.
Yes, Brian Largay, very nice to meet you.
There you go. Michael. Well, welcome aboard. You're the Land Conservation Director for Land Trust of Santa Cruz County.
That's right. I am responsible for conservation planning for our organization and our land management operations.
My first question, of course, is that one of you is a protector and another is a conserver. So, Barry, what does a protector do?
As the Land Protection Director, I'm mainly in charge in the acquisition side of things, but working collaboratively with Brian to both prioritize projects for protection, doing all things due diligence, and leading to the eventual acquisition of these properties prior to turning them over to Brian to steward them in perpetuity.
Okay. Well, Brian, you're the conserver. What does a conserver do?
Sure. So conservation of land that we have protected takes two flavors, depending on the type of protection applied. One form of protection is a conservation easement, and that's where instead of buying the whole property, we've bought the development rights and extinguished them. And for those properties, we visit them once or twice a year and just make sure that the landowner has not developed them. And typically those properties are still in agricultural production, full steam ahead.
Extinguish them?
Extinguish the development rights so that there's a perpetual permanent deed restriction that prevents subdivision of the property typically and construction of additional structures, say, outside of a small area.
So that really is preserving it then.
Right. But still having the property in ownership. Under the landowner's ownership while the land trust holds the development rights and just ensures that the property conservation values are protected.
Okay. What happens when the farmer wants to sell the land?
He must disclose the easement agreement to the potential buyer. But the easement does run with the land, and the land trust holds the easement in perpetuity, meaning forever is responsible for monitoring and enforcing the conservation easement.
You guys have just won a significant victory where you've set aside, what, 178 acres of what was called the Tynan Ranch property near Watsonville, California. Brian, tell us a little bit about the farmland down there.
The Pajaro Valley farmland is absolutely spectacular. The fog and cool temperatures allow very healthy food, strawberries, raspberries, lettuce, other healthy vegetables to be grown. It's almost as if it is spring year-round because of these cool, moist nights and days that don't get too hot. And so a lot of this produce that is exceptionally valuable grows very well there. The land is also flat as a pancake because of the river floodplain, so it's very easy and cost-effective to farm, very sustainable, not a lot of soil erosion, that sort of thing. And so seeing this land stay in production long run is exceptionally valuable.
And tell us a little bit about the Tynan Ranch, Barry.
Yeah, the Tynan Ranch has been a priority for the Land Trust for quite a while now.
Had your eyes on it, did you?
We have, and we had a a really good relationship with the prior landowner, and those relationships are key into us protecting lands in the Pajaro Valley. We worked with our partners at the Conservation Fund to help us with bridge financing, who were actually able to purchase a property outright and hold it in the interim while the Land Trust raised funds from the Department of Conservation.
Yeah. Well, I'd like to get into the financing of all of these things down the road a little bit. Brian, what about what makes that Tynan Ranch so why did you guys have your eyes on it for so long?
From a strategic perspective, it's fairly close to the city of Watsonville. So if the city of Watsonville adopted policies that would allow it to expand substantially, it would have spread onto that property. It's also close to a lake, which has interesting ecologic values, and we have a sustainability mission with regard to the environment as well as ag land, which made that site interesting. And then it's also prime soils for ag production.
Best of the best.
That's right.
Watsonville sits right in the middle of this spectacular farmland. Why? Because that's the best place to build cities, right? It's always in the best farmland. Nice and flat, easy to get. When I think of cities and as they look out to that farmland, I kind of see them like a pack of lions hungry for more land, because they're always hungry. Cities are always hungry for more farmland. Where do you start this process of holding the lions at bay?
So there is a balance, and it's a delicate one. The cities tend to expand over time, and it's very effective and efficient, actually good for land conservation for people to live in cities. If people live more close together, then there's less encroachment on those farmlands and other areas for development. The cities are also where a lot of the hubs of agricultural activity happen. This is where the shipping destination is, the coolers, the packing facilities to get all those salads into those boxes and bags that then end up at the grocery shelves. And so having the cities close to the farmland is helpful. But then there's two main strategies to keep cities from sprawling. One is zoning. And we're grateful that the people in Watsonville chose, in fact, recently in the most recent election, to have a growth boundary around their city.
Yeah, after 20 years of preserving the boundaries of Watsonville, the legislation that was going to free the city to grow was turned back by the folks from, what was it, Sam Earnshaw's got going. What's the name of his outfit here? Okay, we'll catch up to it a little bit. But they fought it, and they won, and they convinced the people of the city of Watsonville to hold their boundaries and maybe build within the city then. So I guess one of the strategies would be to convince cities to grow up instead of out.
That's right, absolutely. And now that's an urban policy, urban planning issue that the land trust doesn't spend a whole lot of expertise or time on. That's not our core competency. But we're certainly thrilled that others invested so much effort in that and that they chose to contain themselves. Mm-hmm. Our strategy is if that's not going to happen, then our ownership of land or the development rights through a conservation easement can prevent the sprawl from occurring if cities want to try to grow in that direction.
Well, Barry, the city is filled with a lot of interests that feed on growth. And you mentioned the fact that your relationships are very important. How do you start, you know, establishing a relationship with all of those lions who would just as soon be gobbling up farmland? Because you have to make friends with them, don't you?
Sure. And, you know, we really put a priority on our relationships with the landowners themselves for the long-term goals of conservation. And, you know, we've had a pretty good track record of both buying and accepting conservation easements in the valley for farmland protection. So I think as we continue to roll out our conservation goals in the area, word gets out and our efforts just become more productive with outreach and doing our projects out there.
It would seem to me, if I were a landowner and had a big chunk of the Pajaro Valley, and I saw the land trust boys driving up the driveway in their pickup, I would go, they're coming to get my land. Does that happen?
That is a perception we're working on changing every day. You know, as we develop those relationships, we like to be viewed more as a partner and less as of a threat. In enabling landowners to both keep their land and ensure it remains as productive farmland forever. So we're hoping to partner with more and more growers as we're moving forward.
Okay.
One item I might add there is that we have no authority. We are not part of county government.
You're a salesman, right? You got to sell.
Sure. We also generally pay full retail price for the land. Okay. And so we're not asking that the land be donated. We're happy to pay that value. And for landowners who have an affinity for ag and the production of healthy food, it's a powerful legacy to
Good.
Do a project with
Michael,
us.
I'll pick that up when we come back from this break. Folks, this is the Food Chain Radio program. Michael Olson, today we're talking about how to preserve farmland from those hungry lions of cities. We have Barry Baker and Brian Largay with us from Land Trust of Santa Cruz County, and you right back.
And now, more of What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, we are back, and we're talking land trust with Land Trust. Land Trust, it means that we're putting the land in a trust and holding it there and not letting it go. So what do you say when you first approach a new landowner, Barry? Hi, I'm Barry.
That's a good way to get started. You know, usually we like to hear, there's usually a common ground that we can find with a new landowner. And hearing their concerns and maybe, any common ground we can find, whether it be agriculture, open space,
baseball, yeah, whatever.
Golf is a good one. And, you know, just hitting off on a personal level and, you know,
first,
not trying
first to...
First
you sell yourself, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And not trying to make any crazy sales pitch right away.
Okay.
These are long-term relationships we're looking for and really just take it day by day and with the eventual goal of looking to do a conservation project.
Brian, once you've sold yourself, then you have to sell on the veracity of the land trust. How do you go about doing that?
Sure. Credibility is of great importance. And one of the things that sets us apart a bit from other land trusts and conservation organizations is we actually own and operate working lands. We have a 250 acres of farmland in production. We depend on the lease revenue from that land to finance our stewardship of that property and a lot of the management practices that goes in there. We own a forest that we harvest for timber production, and we own land that we lease out to cattle grazing. And so we have a good understanding of what it takes to be an agricultural landowner make that land sustainable.
So you can curse the government a little bit and then make some friends that way?
We know the occasional burden of what it takes to get a permit and follow the rules.
Sure. Yeah. And there's a lot of them. And of course, all farmers have good government stories, right? Because they've been in business for a while and there it goes. So you establish the credibility. And then what exactly is your offer?
Really property specific, depending on the conservation values we're looking to protect. We've done everything from purchasing agricultural land and managing it ourselves, purchasing a boilerplate conservation easement to protect the agricultural values. And of late, we've been doing conservation easement projects with actually affirmative rights, where we have the ability to manage riparian wildlife habitat outside of the ag areas. So there's really a full slate of options that we could go through, and depending on the specifics of the property, we'll make an offer.
Well, Brian, Barry brought up a very interesting one, and that is riparian corridors in an era of safe food. So we've seen, you know, hard times for riparian corridors when it gets right down to it, because farmers want to get rid of them, or landholders do, so that reduce the dangers of stray bugs getting into the food. How do you go about dealing with that situation?
Right. So that's, food safety is the number one priority for everybody. The thought of someone getting sick from having a healthy meal is distressing to everybody. And so there are industry standards for good agricultural practices, what it means to have potential threats to food safety close to the produce fields. And we work closely with the growers to ensure that they can follow those to the T without compromising the safety of their product.
And everybody's very aware of it. So any tips you could offer probably would be greatly accepted then.
That's right. And usually what it means is having big buffers and space between that riparian area and the farm fields. And we're happy to accommodate that.
Right. The money. You're going around buying everybody's farmland or the rights to develop it. How do you make the judgment of the value of the development rights? What determines that?
Sure. So each project depends on an appraisal, both before and after a conservation easement is applied. So that's we typically offer appraised value for the conservation easement. And typically a project would be contingent on that price, where the landowner will go into contract. And then once we get the appraised value, we can then make a decision on whether or not the landowner wants to move forward with the project.
Mm-hmm.
But that appraisal is done in compliance with Department of General Services standards, and is thoroughly reviewed by the funding agency for the project.
Okay. Funding agencies. Money's got to come from somewhere to buy these development rights. Where does it come from?
We have a number of partners that we'll work with. As of late, we've been working with the Department of Conservation. It's a California
state agency.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a great program under the Sustainable Agricultural Lands Program that helps fund agricultural conservation projects to reduce greenhouse gases. okay. associated with developing these prime farmlands.
So that's state taxpayers paying for that, paying into that fund then, right?
Correct.
Okay. What about other agencies that you work with?
There's also there's federal agencies. The Natural Resources Conservation Service has an agricultural easement program, which we haven't utilized as of late. We've been typically going through the Department of Conservation for ag projects, but it's great to have those options both at a state and federal level.
Okay, and I noticed that in working on the Tynan Ranch property easement, you worked with some outfit called the Dirt Doctors or the Dirt Capital. Partners.
Right. Yeah, that was somewhat of a co-benefit to what our goals were for the project, but was a great effect of the project in that our partner, the Conservation Fund, who bridged the financing for the project and purchased the property, subsequently sold the fee title to the property to Dirt Capital, who does a lot of work to provide access to small disadvantaged farmers to farm and then eventually own properties such as Tynan Ranch.
Okay, so lease to own kind of operations then.
Right.
What about private citizens? Do you ever get people donating to this program?
We have had considerable donations from the Santa Cruz community to a capital campaign we ran a few years ago, raising several $100,000 expressly for agricultural conservation. Mm-hmm. And we're thrilled that our community is on board with the importance of protecting our local farmland.
How do you sell that to city people? I mean, you know, most of us city people are very distracted. When it gets right down to it, we have a lot of distractions. And farmland is someplace else. How do you sell city people on setting aside some of the money to set aside some of the land?
Isn't that an interesting question? I forget that, being so immersed in this work, that it is easy to just go to the grocery store and think that that's where your food comes from. But at the end of the day, it needs to be grown somewhere. And it's truly miraculous how productive our farmland is in Santa Cruz County. It's so precious and quite rare. There's not much of it. And, you know, if you put the city of San Jose in the Pajaro Valley, it would fill it wall to wall. So it wouldn't take much to lose all of it.
And we're so close to Silicon Valley, where the property values are so high.
And that's right. I mean, an acre in San Jose can cost $10 million.
And right, right.
So it's extremely important that we keep this land protected in agriculture, because the reality is that it's not like you can do this anywhere else. There are very few places on the planet that have our climate and our soils.
Maybe two or three.
That's right.
And maybe that's why if you're in Tokyo and in a supermarket, you see Driscoll berries there, and that's why they come from here.
That's right.
Long ways away. And those berries, berry crops are very precious kinds of things, because you can't grow them most anywhere, or at least for a long time. Maybe a couple weeks out of the year you can grow them, and then it gets too hot or something, and you lose that ability. So that's why our farmland is so incredibly precious here. And preserving it is precious as well. So you went to work on the Tynan property. What led you? You said you had your eyes on it for a long, long time. And evidently it went through a couple owners, and you still kept your eye on it, right?
Right, yeah. And we actually had the option to purchase the conservation easement from the prior landowner. So that gave us the security and the time to raise the funds from the Department of Conservation and eventually fall through on the purchase.
How long did it take to set aside 178 acres, as you did? I mean, from beginning to end of this, you were a baby when it started, right?
In some sense, yes. And yeah, these projects take a long time from beginning, from the first conversation to closing of escrow, I would say probably 4 years, which turns out to be about average given the amount of time it takes to both raise the money and just work out all the details. These are forever documents, so you got to make sure you script them right. They're very difficult to amend once they're recorded. So there's a lot of back and forth with the landowner and just ensuring we get it right the first time.
Landowner's thinking. Take us through that, Brian, a little bit. When you're a landowner and you're thinking about setting aside your property, first of all, you're going to get paid upfront for the development rights. So you're really not losing much of anything at all, are you?
You know, I think that you're taking full advantage of the present value of the development rights.
Right.
Now, some speculator landowners might imagine that at some point in the future,
it's going to be worth $1 billion.
It'll be worth $1 billion, or the city of San Jose will sprawl into this area, and all of a sudden your land values will go through the roof. And so I think that's probably the main hesitancy of people who are holding out for a big win. Mm-hmm. And the appraisals that we use to set the value look at current policies of land and the current zoning and what is the allowed use. And in some cases, the maximum development might just be one house every 40 acres or something like that. And so certain landowners might have wishful thinking that someday they'll be able to have 8 houses on an acre, and it'll be a very different equation.
So you have to really think about where you are right now. And if you're an older landowner, maybe you're not looking so far into the future anyway, looking to, get a little bit of cash, and two, hold on to your property and perhaps give it to another farmer. Does that ethic hold true? Do farmers really think about, man, maybe I'd love to have this property growing crops forever?
I think there's a strong land ethic among many landowners in Santa Cruz County. I think most of the people who are here love the land. And Santa Cruz County has a lot of inconveniences associated with it. And so if you're still here after all these years, chances are you really love the place. I think that the legacy of landowners wanting to see the land stay in production, or one of the other strategies is that by placing a conservation easement on it, the value of that land can be capped in a way that contains future taxes and other burdens, so that the landowner's heirs, or if they sell it to another grower or agricultural operator, that operation isn't burdened with excessive taxes. Mm-hmm. And that helps keep the land in production long term.
Before the show, we were talking a little bit with Barry regarding a book that F.H. King wrote way back in the 1900s called Farmers of 40 Centuries. And he talked about the farmers of Asia who farmed these little pieces of land that had been farmed for 5,000 years and without any implements of modern technology. And I just think about, you know, how much they appreciated that land that had been farmed for so long. And, you know, the Pajo Valley has this wonderful history of agriculture that goes back a long ways, too. And you see that love of farmland throughout the community of Watsonville as well. But still, if you're a farmer and you have that farmland, Lordy knows is a lot worth a lot of money now. So you have to go through a lot of lawyerdom to get the papers right?
To say the least. But it's well worth the time and effort because, like we said, these are documents that last forever. So getting them right the first time is very important. And then also making sure they're enforceable and something that we can live with as far as the easement steward and ensuring they're not going to cause conflict between the land trust and the landowner in the future. is really important to us.
Amen. Well, ladies and gentlemen, this is the Food Chain Radio program. What's eating what? And what's often eating what is cities eating up farmland. Always tend to get to the best farmland because that's where the cities start. In the best farmland. It's flat. It's beautiful. What a perfect place to build. And so we build in them. And as we do, we lose the farmland. So how can we protect them? That's on the table today with Barry Baker and Brian Largay from the Land Trust of Santa Cruz County. And you, do stay tuned. We will be right back.
So much to say, so little time to say it, on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Yes, yeah, so much to say, so little time to say it in. So the Land Trust of Santa Cruz County succeeded in setting aside 178 acres of the world's best farmland, conserving it forever. Nobody will ever be able to develop a 7-Eleven on it, right?
Correct.
There you go. Significant victory. How did you celebrate?
I guess we didn't do a proper celebration, which we probably should do by the end of the year.
So a four-year fight, and you won. And so did the farmer, did the landowner feel like celebrating too?
The landowner, yeah, it was a collaborative. So the Conservation Fund was very much still a part of it. Dirt Capital and the Land Trust. We exchanged celebratory emails, but there was no official celebration.
Oh, got to have a party.
I agree.
Well, from there, I'd like to take this discussion onto the future of farmland in the United States. It seems like we win a little bit, but we lose more than we're winning. And the cities keep growing, and they keep growing into the best farmland. My hometown of Billings, Montana, I was just scanning the paper there, and it's in this beautiful Yellowstone River Valley. And they're fighting over new development, and the development is where? Right in the beautiful farmland. It's always there. How do we stop it? What can we do? Is there a possibility that we'll just have to live without farmland and, you know, grow hydroponic food in warehouses? Barry?
Well, I certainly hope it doesn't come to that. You know, we're doing our best project by project. We'll be undergoing a new farmland priority protection plan that will guide our work for the next 5 to 10 years. We hope to have that complete in the next year or so. And really setting the groundwork for, you know, our next decade of farmland preservation. And we'll see what we can do, you know, just one deal at a time.
I think you got to sell the city.
That's right. I think that's a big part of the project, the long-term goals. We've protected so far in the Land Trust existence about 10% of the Pajaro Valley farmland. That's good, but it's not enough. And that other 90% is enormously valuable. And the prospect of doing all of that in four-year-long deals is intimidating. One strategy that we're adopting is on this farm that we own is to establish an opportunity for the public to come and visit it. Mm-hmm. We're planning a parking area and a harvest trail where there'll be a U-pick path that people can walk along, pick some apples, maybe some berries, some other fruits and vegetables, and look out on the 250 acres of production ag land surrounding this area. And in so doing, what we hope to inspire in some of the people who live in the city and don't get out there that much, just how valuable and wonderful it is to have this local food production.
And, you know, with respect to that, Napa Valley up the coast here is a tourist mecca for people from all over the world. I often wondered that I think Pajaro Valley could be made into a Napa Valley of food when it gets right down to it. And with some great tourist facilities, biking trails and things like that, the area could really be made to shine in a way that people would want to come and just experience what it's like to be here. Green Acres, right here, you know, great tourist facility it would make. But the problem then I see is that most of our farms are small, maybe 70 acres, right? So when you're working, you know, when it takes 4 years to get one chunk of land, that is a significant thing to overcome then for a land trust or for anybody. How can we go about changing that?
That's right. Well, I think having these urban growth limits and planning policies selected by the voters is really, really important to hold the ground, hold the line on city expansion, while organizations like ours protect land through our easements and educate the community with our farm access program.
Mm-hmm. I should mention the four-year timeline. That's from the beginning of conversations to the recording. And we have multiple of those projects going on at any given time. So, you know, this year alone, we'll be closing on four different ranches, three of which hopefully by early next year will all be done and secured.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever thought about starting a co-op of landholders and seeing if you couldn't bunch them all together like a herd of landowners and do it all, a bunch of them at once?
That would be interesting. We haven't explored that idea, but you know, these are such complicated projects. It really just takes
every
individual
piece of, land is different. Tell us a little bit about the paperwork, what makes it so complicated.
You really have to account for all future possibilities and ensuring that the document is accounting for any potential land use, but also being not so overly detailed that you limit yourself in being able to enforce the document.
Right.
So there's a middle ground that you have to try to strike.
So describe all future possibilities. How do you come to grips with that?
Well, you kind of have to look at the aspects of the property and what might be able to be done there. So the two things we typically limit are prohibit future subdivision and division of land ownership. And then those are the two we always go for. And then there's a number of other prohibitions and restrictions that are incorporated mm-hmm. into the document.
And we want to try to anticipate what ag is going to look like and how is it going to feel. At first glance, preventing urbanization, what it looks like is not preventing the construction of buildings and other things like that. You mentioned this urban ag approach of having, production ag in greenhouses that are several stories high and vertical farming and all this stuff. What does that look like? Is that something that would be acceptable or unacceptable on one of these pieces of farmland?
Well, you know, some of our berry growers are looking at that as a great possibility, whereas, you know, they would be able, if they can control the climate, they could escape the Pajaro Valley and grow in a warehouse in Milwaukee or something, you know.
Sure. Right. Isn't that remarkable? Well, maybe that'll make it easier to get strawberries in Milwaukee, and maybe that's okay.
Yeah, there you go.
We won't begrudge them their strawberries.
Yeah. Often an overlooked aspect of sort of the public benefit to all of this is the scenic value of the Pajaro Valley.
Right.
As you drive down Highway 129, it's just gorgeous. So preserving that open space value, we see as a co-benefit to doing the conservation easements.
Yeah, that's how we're going to start our tourist mecca for food, the place to come for food. Yum. What are the most difficult obstacles for you to overcome?
I guess it would be time, as we were discussing. You know, the time is limited, and we're trying to do as much as we can while we have the funding available through these these agencies to do this work. So trying to just get as much done in a short amount of time as we can.
So you've got the money, got to spend it.
The money's there. So we got to get the projects up and rolling.
Good. What can city people do to help the preservation of farmland?
That's a good question. Brian, do you have any ideas on that?
You know, I think that supporting the land trust of Santa Cruz County is one path.
No, does every county have a land trust?
Right. So, no, not necessarily. Many counties do. In the United States, there are 2,000 plus land trusts. So there's a decent chance that if you're in the U.S., there's a land trust working to protect farmland in your neighborhood. Other countries have nonprofits that are also similarly engaged. And if not, they're a project to create one, but that's always a possibility. Mm-hmm. You know, whether local or state regulation is the right pathway depends on your local circumstances and political climate. But having land use planning and zoning that keeps certain ag lands in ag and contains cities is another. You know, there's this growing in and up in cities rather than sprawling out that is really quite essential. There are more and more people being born every year, and finding decent, wonderful neighborhoods for them to live in is important. How are we going to sort that out is a challenge for urban planners, and that's a very important field to invest in.
One of my great fears, of course, is that we're going to end up like China, living in 50-story tall apartment complexes. And with respect to China, it was really interesting to see how much of the explosive growth in China was made possible by cities selling farmland to developers. And now that farmland's gone. And with it, the ability of it to generate food for all those people. So I guess therein lies a lesson for us too, right? We have to figure out how to maintain that farmland. Because we need the food, simple as that.
Absolutely.
There we go. Where do we go from here? What's next? What are you looking at next?
So we continue to have these conversations with landowners in Pajaro Valley, and we're really looking forward to updating our priority plan for future ag protection.
Do they ever come to you? Do landholders ever come to you first?
Absolutely.
They do?
Yeah, projects come in all different ways. But yeah, if landowners are ever curious about doing projects, my phone and email are available on our website.
Okay, which is?
Landtrustofsantacruzcounty.org. Mm-hmm.
Now, do you have other agencies with which you compete to preserve farmland? Or to preserve land?
We have collaborative relationships with nearby land trusts, the Ag Land Trust of Monterey County and the Elkhorn Slough Foundation. Both have ag protection programs. Because the Pajaro Valley is in part in Monterey County, right, we work closely with them not to step on their toes, because competing with other conservation organizations is not the best use of the public mm-hmm. interest. The Pajaro Valley, they've both invited us to work throughout the Pajaro Valley. So we're
good. And what about other kinds of land, natural landscapes and whatnot? Isn't there something like a Semper Virens fund that sets land aside as well?
Sure. So they're quite active in the Redwood Forest region of Santa Cruz County. And almost half of Santa Cruz County's land area is in forest, much of that in Redwood Forest. We do have a forest conservation program and have done a number of forest projects. Semper Virens Fund also works in that space. Peninsula Open Space Trust works on forest conservation in Santa Cruz County. And we have collaborative relationships with those organizations to make sure.
So there's lots of different agencies that are working to preserve farmland and other lands then.
That's right. Yes. And each organization has their own spin on things. One of the things that we're quite proud about is that we're invested in the working lands of Santa Cruz County, particularly.
Working lands. Now, there are a lot of forest lands that are still working lands, too, because those redwood trees are very valuable. People farm them, right?
That's right. They're exceptionally valuable in that they grow this rot-resistant wood that holds up great outside. They grow extraordinarily fast. And when you cut a tree down, the same rootstock will grow a whole new trunk for you much faster than other tree species. And we are actually just completing a timber harvest on one of our properties. We manage redwoods in Santa Cruz County in a very sustainable way, mm-hmm. taking maybe one out of every four trees. And the miracle of these timber operators is that they can cut down one tree in a clump and leave the rest of them untouched so they can continue to grow and get bigger and bigger and then maybe come back around in 10 or 15 years and take another one.
I think Big Creek Lumber was also a big innovator in selective harvesting like that.
I think they invented the field.
They invented it, yeah.
In Western the United States. Yeah, it's spectacular.
And so it's a very small county, Santa Cruz County is. I think it's one of the smallest in California, and yet so incredibly productive with respect to the yield per acre here. And like you say, Brian, it's so precious, and you don't find it almost anywhere. One or two places in the world that has land like this.
It's amazing. So the forests are enormously productive, the grasslands are enormously productive, the cropland is enormously productive, and the community is small. And one of the really interesting things that happens as a result is it's been this hotbed of innovation. You mentioned Big Creek Lumber inventing this idea of taking one out of four trees, leaving the rest standing for 10 or 15 years later. It's also been a place of innovation on grazing, where grazing is used to improve and increase the health and biodiversity of grasslands. A lot of that science was pioneered in Santa Cruz County. This is where organic agriculture, certification of organic agriculture, born in Santa Cruz County.
That's right.
Such creativity that arises from this small community.
And thereby, the need to preserve our farmland is even greater. Folks, thank you for tuning in. This has been the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, your host, with Barry Baker, Brian Largay from the Land Trust of Santa Cruz County. Now go out there and save some farmland. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with Michael Olson. And if your friends missed the show, tell them to log on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with its farmer's face on it and live.